welcome to Sharper Iron. Spend the next hour with us studying the living and active Word of God, His two-edged sword of law and gospel, recorded for you in Holy Scripture, all about Jesus Christ, crucified, risen, and ascended for you. Thanks for tuning in this morning here on Worldwide KFUO, Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. I am your host, Pastor Timothy Apple of Faith Lutheran Church in Godfrey, Illinois. Sharper Iron is underwritten by the Lutheran Church Extension Fund, where your investments help support the work of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Visit lcef.org for more information. On this Thursday, January 16th, we're studying Isaiah chapter 23, verses 1 to 18. In today's text, Isaiah speaks an oracle concerning Tyre, the wealthy seaport of the West. The riches of the city will not be able to save it from the Lord's purpose to defile the pompous pride of mankind. To help us sharpen our faith in Christ as we study God's Word today, we have with us regular guest, the Reverend Dr. Adam Kuntz. Pastor Kuntz serves at Redeemer Lutheran Church and School in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. Pastor Kuntz, welcome back to Sharper Iron.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me again.
So we get started today, Pastor. Give us some context on Isaiah, his ministry, and what we've been reading leading up to this chapter.
We are in the portion of Isaiah that is largely about either Isaiah's own day or at least things around Isaiah in his own day. So Isaiah gives you a date towards, you know, let's say, I don't know, the second third of the history of the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah. And that's all just in, you know, chapter 1, verse 1. So he gives you some definite dates and times for when he's ministering. And we're in a section, you know, roughly between the mid to late teens in terms of chapters to where we are now with Tyre, that are about oracles, specific words of God given to different groups of people, including Judah, including Israel, but here concerning a pagan kingdom or a pagan nation of Tyre, which is a city, but it's the chief city of a larger area of Phoenicia. And all of those different oracles are aimed at proclaiming what God's judgment will be, particularly in this portion of Isaiah, what God's judgment will be for those different groups. Yeah.
So, well, as you said, this is part of a larger section. Back in chapter 13, that was the first time we saw this word, an oracle or the oracle, and it started with Babylon in chapter 13. And we've heard about Assyria, we've heard about Egypt, we've heard about the Philistines, a number of other foreign nations. Tyre is going to be the last one in the list before chapter 24, not to spoil too much, but it's going to say the Lord's going to empty the whole earth. So, I mean, we've kind of been building up to chapter 24. How does Tyre perhaps serve as a fitting conclusion?
Tyre is a conclusion because it is a place that has remarkably survived in largely the same sort of prosperity and prominence because of its niche, and we'll talk about that niche because that's part of the judgment on it. In its niche, it has been consistently wealthy and well set up. And that's not exactly true of really any of the other, that consistency is not exactly true of the other nations on which judgment has already been pronounced, whether near to the Israelites or far away from them. Because with the others, you're talking about empires that have waxed and waned, that have been conquered and then have come back from having been conquered, right? So you've got Babylonians, you've got Neo-Babylonians, you've got Assyrians, you've got Neo-Assyrians. And when scholars talk about that stuff, they're doing that just to capture, yeah, it's the same group, it's generally around the same places, maybe even the same capital city, but their fortunes have waxed and waned. Tyre hasn't been like that. So for Tyre to be overthrown, for judgment, for God's judgment to be sent to Tyre in a way that is, let's say, typical in the biblical sense of the word type, like the judgment of Jerusalem in the Gospels, it's a type of larger judgment, of larger overthrowing of man's pride. That's amazing. That's remarkable that would happen to Tyre.
One of the comments that I looked at suggested as well that as the list began with Babylon in a very typical fashion in the same sense of the word, now it ends with Tyre, Babylon being the great city and ultimately nation in the east, Tyre now in the west. You see the full range of God's judgment and his kingship over all the earth by the beginning and the end of this section.
Yeah, and that's, you kind of have to accept you know, you ministered in Texas, I'm in Pittsburgh. Those places are both very much places unto themselves. So you kind of have to accept an Israelite sense of what is really far to the west and really far to the east.
You know, so Meyer is not really that far west.
Right. It's not that far, but an Israelite doesn't go that far, right? So for a Pittsburgher, the world kind of stops at the Ohio border. You know what I mean? Like no one's ever been over there. Like what's over there? I don't even know, you know? So that's, you know, that's just the way people are where they live. And that's what you're getting in the Bible, is that Tyre is about as far west as they're really going to cover. And I want to talk about some of these place names because they are, along with Ezekiel 26, 27, 28, such good evidence of how Tyre and the Phoenicians as a larger people have gone places that nobody else has gone. I mean, the Phoenicians are just about the only people in the Old Testament who we know archaeologically got to the places that my ancestors were from in northwestern Europe, because otherwise you wouldn't know from the Bible that that place even exists, let alone America, Vietnam, lots of places in the world.
Before we read the text, tell us a little bit more about Tyre in the ancient world and how it's going to set up in that typical fashion. I think despite the fact that Tyre does show up in other places in the scriptures, it maybe is a name that's less known than, say, Babylon at the beginning of this list. So how does Tyre serve as a particular type then?
Tyre is the chief city of an area that's going to be that's called Phoenicia, which is a reference to the little shells that you can still find off the coast of what is now called Lebanon and the modern nation of Israel. That they dive down, they pick these shells up, they crush them, and it dyes stuff purple. And that's going to be because of the preciousness of it, the color of royalty from Babylonian times to Roman times. I mean, thousands of years, right? And that's part of Tyre's niche. Tyre's niche is you're on the sea and you are between what we would call the Middle East and what we would call North Africa or Europe. And using ships, they have become and they have remained extremely wealthy. Both Tyre, the capital city of Phoenicia, and Phoenicia broadly, which includes Sidon, a place that we see even the Lord having some interaction with in the Gospels. And these places are all just north of the northern kingdom of Israel. I mean, we're talking less than 40 miles from Mount Carmel. But it's another people, it's another group. And their niche here is they are good at selling things and transporting things from one people to another. And that's what has been the preservation of their prosperity. They have pretty much time out of mind been wealthy. They've allied themselves at various times with various kingdoms. You might remember that the kings of Tyre are allies, and they're very willing to sell things to both David and Solomon. But they were there doing stuff like that before then, and they will remain after Isaiah's time for another couple hundred years before finally being overthrown. But they enjoy thousands of years of that same prosperity in that niche that they've carved out for themselves.
The geography of Tyre plays a little bit of a role in that ability to hang around for a while too, I think, right?
So the original Tyre is on the mainland, and that was probably named after sort of like a Romulus type figure, a founder who becomes a god named Ushu, who's also called Melkart later, more commonly Melkart. And he's a little bit in his characteristics like what the listeners probably know from Hercules. He's a very powerful, strong god. So that's Melkart. Ushu is overthrown at one point, and thus the legend, but probably also the history, goes with Ushu, the legendary figure, but you know, also the Tyrians themselves, fleeing to this island that's just offshore from the mainland, and they're refounding, and then, you know, this basically becomes sort of like the island of Manhattan, an island fortress in the center of power. There's going to be what the original city on the mainland turns into, kind of like a suburb, but it's the island that's going to preserve their power. And eventually that's where pretty much all the wealthy and all the strength and certainly all of their naval power, which is what they are. They're a naval power. They're not a land power. All their naval power is centered. And that's going to keep them going even when they're besieged for a very long time.
All right, let's go ahead and take a look at this text. I'm sure more of these themes will come up as we read. This is Isaiah 23. The oracle concerning Tyre. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for Tyre is laid waste, without house or harbor. From the land of Cyprus it is revealed to them. Be still, O inhabitants of the coast. The merchants of Sidon who crossed the sea have filled you. And on many waters your revenue was the grain of Shihor, the harvest of the Nile. You are the merchant of the nations. Be ashamed, O Sidon, for the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea, saying, I have neither labored nor given birth. I have neither reared young men nor brought up young women. When the report comes to Egypt, they will be in anguish over the report about Tyre. Cross over to Tarshish. Wail, O inhabitants of the coast. Is this your exultant city, whose origin is from days of old, whose feet carried her to settle far away? Who has purposed this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns, whose merchants were princes, whose traders were the honored of the earth? The Lord of hosts has purposed it, to defile the pompous pride of all glory, to dishonor all the honored of the earth. Cross over your land like the Nile, O daughter of Tarshish. There is no restraint any more. He has stretched out his hand over the sea. He has shaken the kingdoms. The Lord has given command concerning Canaan to destroy its strongholds. And he said, You will no more exult, O oppressed virgin daughter of Sidon. Arise, cross over to Cyprus. Even there you will have no rest. Behold the land of the Chaldeans. This is the people that was not. Assyria destined it for wild beasts. They erected their siege towers. They stripped her palaces bare. They made her a ruin. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for your stronghold is laid waste. In that day, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, like the days of one king. At the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre as in the song of the prostitute. Take a harp, go about the city, O forgotten prostitute. Make sweet melody, sing many songs that you may be remembered. At the end of 70 years, the Lord will visit Tyre, and she will return to her wages, and will prostitute herself with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. Her merchandise and her wages will be holy to the Lord. It will not be stored or hoarded, but her merchandise will supply abundant food and fine clothing for those who dwell before the Lord. That is our text for today, Isaiah chapter 23. So it starts the oracle concerning Tyre. We've talked a little bit about that word oracle, yeah, or sometimes translated burden. Any thoughts to add, Pastor Kuntz?
It's really just an idea that this is coming directly from the Lord, and that the significant thing for a chapter like this one is that he's proclaiming, I am the Lord of all the earth. You know, this is what Jesus says after his resurrection, but it's true for the only true God forever, that all authority in heaven and on earth belongs to him. So the idea that he is holding to account these people who do not know him is part of the Bible's overarching vision of all mankind's accountability to the only true God.
Now, that reality, we've noted that several times in this section.
Yeah.
Just as a way of a reminder, Israel is the one that's hearing these words, it seems, at first from Isaiah. So how, I mean, these are words directed to Tyre.
Yeah.
How does that then affect Israel to hear these things about Tyre?
Yeah, it's part of, I hate to bring him up, Pastor Apple, because we're in Isaiah. But this is part of Paul's contention. I know. It's just
always Paul.
I hope that people don't go back in the archives and find out. You know, I always pull this trick. It's part of Paul's contention about his own people, right? So Israel, according to the flesh, is the way that Paul talks about it. To them belong the oracles. Is that part of Israel's purpose? Is what you could call missional, rather than, like, they just have information about all of these other people that, you know, that those other people are not given to know, but Israel knows what's going to happen to Tyre, or Israel knows what's going to happen to Ethiopia or Egypt, you know, in other parts of Isaiah. Israel's purpose is to be given the word of the Lord so that the word of the Lord might be made known to the nations. And this is going to come back in at the end of Isaiah in a very big way. Especially chapters 65 and 66. And when it comes back in, it's not surprising because it's part of the Lord's intention, plan, purpose, right? That the nations would be held accountable to him and that the knowledge of the Lord would fill the earth as the waters fill the earth, and that that would also include, and he would begin to call even these nations his people. They would become like his people, Israel. So that the possession of the oracle is not there for you to say, well, we know what's going to happen to you. It's there so that with time, in some manner, these things would be made known to the nations, and the nations would also glorify the Lord.
Yeah, which Isaiah has seen and spoken in a number of places.
Right.
Those things are certainly part and parcel to this. So this is the oracle concerning Tyre, and it starts by a cry out to the ships of Tarshish to wail. So Tarshish, I mean, this is Jonah. Why are we talking about this? The ships of Tarshish.
These are your super tankers of the day. Tarshish, and I'm very definite on this one in both Jonah and here in Isaiah 23, that Tarshish is somewhere that we would now call modern Spain. The reason I'm definite on that is because we know that the Phoenicians colonized those areas even as early as 1000 BC. So they're already there. And Tarshish is at the kind of the outer limits of the Bible's vision westward, looking westward. And that's why Jonah flees. That's how he's trying to flee as far as he possibly can from having to go to Nineveh. He's gonna get on a boat and go to Tarshish instead. The ships of Tarshish, you can just look up that phrase, and you're going to find that it's used many times. In Isaiah and in other places, to talk about these particularly large vessels, because they're going about as far as, with the exception of a couple exploring expeditions we know from other ancient sources, the Phoenicians did up into, you know, Western and Northwestern Europe. This is about as far as they go. So this is a long haul kind of a ship, and the reason it's going to wail, or the reason it needs to cry out, is because the source of its prosperity, the place that it gets, you know, the stuff to take to these distant ports, to this specific distant port in what's now probably southern Spain, is that's going to be gone. So this whole way of life, the way that everyone has set up things for a long time, and the way that, in a way, what we call the Mediterranean Sea, what the Romans will one day call our sea, really at this time is a Phoenician sea. And that whole reality will change in the same way that you could say, well, you know, in 1920 there is a British Empire, but in 2020 there's no more British Empire. There are remnants of that, but it's just gone. And if you said that in 1920, like, there just won't be a British Empire, you know, probably people in London are going to be like, well, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
it's been here as long as we've been alive, and it's going to keep being here. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so the sun never sets on the British Empire was
right. The
phrase. And
yeah.
It's like we're picturing something like that being decreed here.
The
picture that I have here is kind of like the ships are maybe trying to come home to Tyre, and there's no place to dock.
No, that's right, because it is revealed to them from the land of Cyprus. Cyprus is to the west of Tyre. So by the time they get on their eastward journey, they're really almost there. I mean, I want to say it's like maybe 150 miles from Cyprus, which is still called Cyprus, you know, remarkable. It's like Syria in the Bible, still called Syria. By the time they get to Cyprus, they're practically almost there, but they're going to hear, sorry, there's nowhere for you to go. You were going to go there, it doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. And to be fair to the ships of Tarshish, to ancient peoples generally, is that most of the stuff in the Bible that we're talking about, empires, Tyre's prosperity, that lasts vastly longer than the British Empire, as any of us thinks about it.
Sure.
That lasts vastly longer than the United States has existed. So these are incredible realities that Isaiah is saying the Lord in his judgment will change things that your, you know, 14 times great-grandfather took for granted. That will be gone.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, you mentioned the island of Manhattan before. That's maybe
not
a bad thing to think about because of the financial meaning of the island of Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, all of those things are tied up in Tyre as well,
right,
such that the destruction of Tyre means just all kinds of things are thrown into to chaos and confusion for the people of the world who depend on all of the wealth that flows in and through and around Tyre.
Right. Yeah. And you always have a connection between finance in its various, you know, manifestations and levels of sophistication. You know, are we dealing in mortgage-backed securities, or what are we dealing with? You know, how is credit flowing and functioning? You always have a connection between that and seaports, because these are points of contact between people who don't know each other and can't really trust each other, but can buy and sell from each other. So that's why seaports like New York, like San Francisco, like Hong Kong, are always, you know, London in its own way. They're always going to become wealthy in this specific way. And if they can keep that trade up, then they will remain that way. Dependent on Tyre, just in this chapter, are Sidon in verse 4, which is, you know, let's say maybe kind of like a Philadelphia or a Boston to Tyre's New York. It's nearby. It's also a port, but it's not quite as prominent as Tyre is. But also in verse 6, oh, inhabitants of the coastland. And that's just generally up and down the coast. The way that their whole livelihood, and I think that what's key here, talking about wealth. So if you start with the Babylonians in this entire section of Isaiah, you're talking about really that's a land power, that's an extensive power, and that empire is largely about power. Tyre's power is really about its wealth specifically. So it's not, nobody's saying, oh, we're all going to be invaded by the armies of Tyre and Sidon. But that Tyre and Sidon ensure that we get things that we want from afar. I mean, you know, to be fair, they're not always bad guys, as it were. The naval expeditions that that Solomon sends from the far south, I think it's now called like Eleth, but it's called Ezion Geber in the Bible. The Tyrians help Solomon do that because they have expertise in these things to go down to what would now be like the Horn of Africa, Somalia, Kush, in Bible terms. They're the ones who can do stuff like this. So lots of people depend on their expertise, their money, their know-how, and their contacts, right? Wealth is an incredible connector when it exists. Not always to the benefit of everyone, obviously, but it brings groups and places together in a certain way. So all of that going away has ramifications way outside Tyre. It's not just like the prophecies and, you know, Nahum of the overthrow of Nineveh, right? Or Jonah's threat that Nineveh will be overthrown, which is a tragedy for Ninevites, but maybe not for the people under their command. This is a tragedy for lots of people because their whole livelihood, maybe the stuff they produce, where they ship it to, what they get from those places, depends on Tyre. So Tyre's overthrow is an overthrow for a lot of people, not just the people who live there.
Sure. I mean, if you know, with Tarshish being over in Spain, you have Egypt mentioned. It's like the entire Mediterranean basin here is being affected.
That's
Babylon
right.
Gets mentioned toward the end, probably as someone that Tyre should consider as its overthrow, too. So, I mean, we've got a worldwide scope here.
You do.
Thinking about the financial aspect of this, I'm not sure if this is a good comparison, but maybe something like this. If, like, Swiss banks and the reputation that they have, if Swiss banks suddenly fail, the economic impact of that is something maybe similar to the economic impact of what we're talking about here.
Right. Yeah. When you have finance, and this is something to notice about the way that wealth is described and how it pulls people together, particularly what the Bible usually calls merchants. The Bible doesn't have a word like businessman or financier, but merchant is usually the term. And you're going to find that in James. You find that in Revelation. You find that in other places. You find it in the prophets, certainly in the Old Testament. Is that when wealth connects people together, there's also a power that the person in charge of that wealth has over those who need his wealth to function. So it's you know, this is sometimes called soft power in modern diplomacy. You could also describe it as hard power, right? If you need the city of London to process your currency transactions in the modern day, you need the British government to be more or less favorable to you. It's why, in some ways, you know, Britain leaving the EU was earth-shaking to many, many, many people, right? So what's happening here with Tyre is that you're getting a complete change of the way the world is working, because what was there, whether you think of the city of London, whether you think of Hong Kong, whether you think of Manhattan, just is not there anymore. And that means that the thing that people have been leaning on, and this image of leaning you get in Isaiah when you talk about, you know, alliances with foreign powers, right, for the Israelites. But many people are leaning on the wealth of Tyre, and now it's gone. So what do I do with my life? What has my life become now that that's not there anymore? I think that it's why it's such a natural transition between judgment on Tyre and judgment on the whole earth in the next chapter. It's not an accident at all. It's not random. It's not even really a jump. It's like, what if the way that the whole world functions economically and financially is just gone? Well, that looks like a judgment on the whole earth to me, right? That's not just one city somewhere in the desert.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where the larger context and message of Isaiah is so important to keep in mind for this chapter, although it's perhaps not explicit in this chapter as it is in other places. The thought is, like, trust in the Lord, you know, in quietness and trust. That's coming up in chapter 30. Rely on the Lord. That is ultimately Isaiah's message. Don't trust in foreign nations. Don't trust in their military power. Don't trust in their wealth. Trust in the Lord, the one who can bring such things upon not only Tyre, but on the whole earth. We're going to keep looking more at this text on the other side of the break. You're listening to Sharper Iron on KFUO. Talking to Pastor Adam Kuntz this morning. We will be right back. Please stick around.
Did you know that an investment with Lutheran Church Extension Fund exclusively supports LCMS ministries and church workers? That's right. LCEF ensures LCMS churches, schools, and organizations have access to the financial resources they need to sustain, strengthen, and start ministry work. In other words, you can feel good investing with LCEF because we share your Lutheran values and love for the church. Learn more at lcef.org.
LCF is a nonprofit religious organization. Therefore, LCF investments are not FDIC insured bank deposit accounts. This is not an offer to sell investments or solicitation to buy. LCF will offer and sell its securities only in states where authorized. The offer is made solely by LCF's offering circular. Investors should carefully read the offering circular, which more fully describes associated risks.
Welcome back to Sharper Iron. It is Thursday, January 16th. We're studying Isaiah chapter 23, verses 1 to 18 with Pastor Adam Kuntz. He serves at Redeemer Lutheran Church and School in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. Pastor Kuntz, prior to the break, we were talking about just the how wild it is. That's not even stunning, amazing, that the Lord would overthrow Tyre, not simply just for that particular city, but indeed for the whole world. One of the features of Tyre, because of its geography, because of its role with the ships, is the fact that it's on the sea. There's lots of talk of water and sea. In fact, the sea even talks in verse 4. Talk to us about the sea, especially in the biblical context.
Yeah, the sea in the Bible, and this is kind of like a thing, like we said earlier, about you just have to accept Tyre is sort of the western limit of the world for most Israelites, as Babylon or maybe Media is the eastern limit. The sea is generally an element of chaos. It's scary. And the book of Jonah obviously does nothing to dispel that notion because, you know, I mean, if you just look at the Israelites, they're not doing a lot of sailing. And when they do go sailing, they need the help of Tyre, as we noted before the break. So the sea is the thing that really only the Lord controls. I mean, it's completely wild. It would be like if you took somebody, you grow up in the city, and now we're going to plop you down in some national wilderness in like North Idaho, and you know that grizzly bears exist. But you're also like possibly just scared of mule deer because you've like never seen one jump past you or whatever. So it's just terrifying. So the idea here is that the sea is the element that Tyre, really of all nations, has almost conquered. They're comfortable on the sea. And that makes them, you know, maybe intimidating in a way to an Israelite. But the declaration in 4 that the sea makes is that it really does not have control, right? It is subject to the control of the word of the Lord. When you see stuff like this in the Bible, I think people just brush past it because we don't think very much about something that the Bible takes for granted and then has, you know, in speech, in the case of Isaiah 23:4, that the sheer existence of the creation is evidence of the Creator. It evidences specifically His power. And here, even the sea, with its power, with its rage, with its incomprehensibility to your average Israelite, certainly to Isaiah himself, the sea is subject to the control of the word of the Lord, not to the plans of Tyre. And so that element of chaos has now just been conquered by the Lord's decree. When you're thinking about something that just seems totally outside of human control, right? These are the very things that the Lord himself is controlling. It's going to be the same thing when you get the strong man Cyrus much later in the prophet Isaiah, right? He's going to describe him like some kind of silly little farm animal, and he puts his fingers in his nostrils and drags him where he wants him to go, right? That these things that appear to your average person or even to entire nations as uncontrollable, crazy, wild, destructive, these are the very things that the Lord, through his word, just is in complete control of.
Is there also perhaps a shot at some Canaanite mythology going on here with the role of the various Canaanite gods and Baal? And I think Yam is the name of one of the Hebrew gods, and that's the name of the sea anyways, such that, okay, maybe we're going to let the sea's going to talk here, but only under the Lord's direction and under the Lord's power. Because we've kind of seen throughout these oracles, especially in regards to Egypt, the idols are always under attack and the Lord shows his power over them.
Yeah, the sea is a strong god. Like Baal or Zeus, right? So the sea often has the name in various places, Ugarit, in Byblos, in Tyre, in Sidon. Often has the name Yam, which is also the Hebrew word for the sea, is Yam. And it not by accident, Tyre's most successful colony elsewhere is Carthage in North Africa. And in Carthage, and much less so that we know of archaeologically, in Phoenicia itself, but in Carthage, we know that there was extensive practice of particularly the sacrifice of infants, but of human beings generally. And this is just an observation I'm making. This is not quite the same thing as saying, here's what, you know, verse 7 means.
Sure.
But that human sacrifice is practiced by peoples, particularly when they sense that they are completely overwhelmed by something. And maybe they sense that they're totally overwhelmed by it regularly, so it's practiced regularly, as it seems to have been by the Phoenicians. But even the Romans, who don't generally practice human sacrifice, practice it on a really specific number of occasions when it seems that Rome itself will be lost if the ultimate sacrifice is not offered. So to worship the sea, to go upon the sea, to try to conquer the sea, is not just, you know, Tyre being proud. It's also Tyre being enslaved to this sea god, to this might, to this the rage of the waves that it can't control. And here, the Lord of Israel is mastering the sea, right? He is the stronger man, right, in the way that Jesus portrays himself relative to those dark powers that control mankind in a sinful state. Jesus is stronger. He's stronger than the ocean. He's stronger than the demons. He's a stronger man. And so the sea here is mastered. The gods, like the gods of Egypt in the book of Exodus, the great god of the Phoenicians, whom they worship because it's the source of all their prosperity, the ocean, the sea, he is also mastered by the Lord.
Yeah, and the people, as they witness this destruction of Tyre, are kind of asking that question and don't know how to deal with this.
You know, right.
Like verses 7 and 8, like, is this really what we thought it was? Isn't this Tyre? How could this have happened? And who has done it? And that's where you see, I think, what you called earlier, the missional purpose of Israel. Israel is to make known the Lord has done this. He is the one who's behind all this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you get this, you get a phrase in verse 8, for example, Tyre, the bestower of crowns, right? Is that Tyre is not large, but it is crucial to pretty much everything that happens around it because it facilitates trade. It facilitates the ability to build. It makes a lot possible. And that means that they are what we would call them in, you know, political context. We'd say, oh, that guy's the kingmaker. That guy doesn't have to himself be in charge. He doesn't have to sign all the checks. He decides who's in charge. He's the kingmaker. And Tyre has a position like that because of its wealth. So what happens when something like that is overthrown in a person, either a person's life or the life of the nations, which is, I mean, Isaiah's view is very broad here right now, right? This is wide angle cinematography right now. We're not doing it up close on, you know, some individual's face, like when Isaiah, you know, several chapters ago was talking about himself as a man of unclean lips. This is the wide angle. We're looking at the nature of the overthrow of idolatry for not just this nation, which in itself is not that many people, a city that's not that large, but a nation that is crucial, that is a hinge for so many other nations, so many other peoples, in so many other places. And when that is overthrown, when its pride is thrown down, when its idolatry is rebuked by the victory of the God of Israel over its gods, then you're dealing with a situation where, I mean, people don't know their left hand from their right. They have no idea what to do. It's the kind of distress that you get described among the merchants in Revelation, right? That's why the overthrow of Tyre, which isn't going to happen until the 4th century BC, the overthrow of Tyre is typical of distress and tribulation at any time because it's a human, idolatrous institution, group, place, whatever, on which so many people depend. And now it's gone. Well, what do I do now? I have no idea. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Not even the sea itself knows what to do in this chapter. Right? Because things that were so solid for so long, really for thousands of years, honestly. Thousands of years. Maybe 2,000 years with Tyre. And the place will still exist. It just won't be what it once was. That's all gone. And that is a stunning proclamation of God's power, particularly, that he can do these things that no one ever imagined.
Yeah, well, and that's certainly revealed there in verse 9, that the Lord of hosts has purposed it. He defiles the pompous pride of all glory.
Yeah.
He dishonors the honored of the earth. These are themes that Isaiah has been preaching and will continue to preach throughout, that the Lord alone has glory. Mankind is of no help. And when the Lord does these types of things, the only place to flee is the Lord himself. There's no other place to go.
Yeah, I mean, one way to think about this is that a verse from later on in Isaiah from 55 that people use kind of to say what I just said and to say what Isaiah is saying in chapter 23. My thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, says the Lord. That's from 55. People use that to say, you know, God is going to do whatever he wants to do, which is true. I think what's key to notice is that in 55, that has specific reference to his grace. Here, the fact that he can do whatever he wants to do, that his power and his Godhead are well known, even to nations that do not know anything else about him. They know that he exists and that he is mighty. They can see that in the overthrow even of the mighty. I mean, that's not good news. It's just the case, right? But when he says, "My thoughts are not your thoughts," he's not talking about the overthrow of mighty nations, which anybody who ever picks up a history book could find out is true, right? I mean, like, you know, go find, you can find them on the internet. You can go find CIA reports from the 1980s talking about how powerful the Soviet Union is, right? You're like 5 years from the Soviet Union not existing anymore. They're like, wow, they've never been stronger, right? Like, there's plenty of examples. You don't need the Bible to tell you that human might and pride are vain. You need the Bible to tell you that God uses that same power by which he overthrows man's might and pride, also to bring salvation to mankind. That's the "my thoughts are not your thoughts."
As we look at other details from this text, we hear about the Lord giving more commands, other things he's doing. In verse 11, it talks about command concerning Canaan to destroy its strongholds. So, I mean, Phoenicia, I suppose, is pretty close to Canaan, as we've already said, but why the mention of Canaan here?
Yeah. Canaan is an older name for what seems to have been a larger place than just Phoenicia. It seems to have included things to the south that by this time are either the northern kingdom or the southern kingdom. I think the reason the word comes back in here, and you can think about, you still get the same overlap even by the time the Gospels are written in the, you know, the mid first century AD. You still get the same overlap because the lady who's described as Canaanite in Matthew is Syrophoenician, kind of Syrian slash or hyphen Phoenician, in other Gospels. So you get the same overlap between Phoenicia and Canaan. The reason to bring the word Canaan back, right, is to say that Canaan is a place that should have already been cleansed of idolatry, because Canaan is the land of promise. Idolatry should already be gone, but we all know well that the stewardship of the cleansing of the land that was given to Israel was already at a halt in the book of Joshua. I mean, centuries earlier. So what's happening here is that the Lord is not slack in his purposes. If he has proclaimed that he will judge the idolatry of Canaan, as well as sliding very naturally into the next chapter, the idolatry of all mankind, then that's going to happen. He doesn't reckon time, history, the way that we do, where you know, we have kind of a limited perspective. In the same way that maybe an Israelite is somewhat limited in his perspective on geography, we tend to be very limited modern people in our perspective on time. We think, oh, we did that 60 years ago. We don't do that anymore. Or, you know, people did that like in pioneer days or something. Nobody does that anymore. And we tend to just assume that if it was a long time ago, it can't possibly matter anymore. Whereas God is very patient, both in executing his judgments and with sinners, right? In the same way that he's very powerful, he's also very patient. And so he's not deterred by the fact that hundreds of years earlier, the Israelites have sort of stopped working on the project. You know, Canaan is not getting cleansed of idolatry. If anything, idolatry gains ground from, you know, the end of Joshua onwards. You know, it's spreading even over the land that was originally cleansed of idolatry. So now the strength of Canaan is being overthrown in the overthrow of the mightiest city in anything that could be called Canaan.
Pastor Kuntz, with those thoughts in mind about Canaan, let's talk about some of the other things concerning the places that are mentioned in verse 12. We get Sidon and Cyprus again. The Chaldeans come up in verse 13. Talk to us about the Chaldeans.
Yeah, the Chaldeans, this is the people which was not Assyria established it for desert creatures. You're talking about something that was erected by enormous political might, enormous military might in the case of Assyria. And they will find it to be almost like a desert place. It's remarkable, right? Because Tyre is the opposite of such a place. I mean, this is a... if there are any Dune fans in the audience, this is the contrast between where the House Atreides originally comes from, a wet, you know, rich place, and now they go to a desert place. So you're taking Tyre that is wealthy, sea-oriented, and it's going to become like a desert place. So what's remarkable there is that Tyre is turned into almost something like the ruins of Nineveh, right, in the judgment that the Lord works.
Well, and I mean, with the Chaldeans also being connected to the Babylonians, at least later on, if you think about where we started this section in chapter 13, it's like Tyre here at the end is invited, okay, take a look at the Chaldeans. See
right.
how they did against the Lord and his might. What makes you think you'll do any better?
Right. Yeah, and these are also places that in their times have attacked Tyre and not succeeded in overthrowing it. So the fact that they have come and gone has been the ground of pride, further pride, for the Tyrians. What we're going into with the last part of the chapter then is related to, you know, Tyre could look at its history and say, we've been fine so far, you know, we've been just fine. Americans are a little bit like this in our amnesia. Like, we don't remember that Washington was burned by the British, you know, in a war that most of us don't even remember occurred, right? So it's kind of easy to forget your lowlights and it's easy to remember your highlights. So, this is understandable for the Tyrians because their highlights have included these people try to destroy us and they're not even around anymore. So we're going to be fine, right? We're going to be totally fine. As we look into the future, as the Lord looks into the future, he sees something different, right? He's telling them something different is going to happen to you.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, just thinking through the way that this chapter gets referenced in Revelation 18 as part of the section on fallen Babylon is Babylon the Great.
Yeah.
Like that same thought seems to be prevalent in any human pride, to speak it as broadly, that these things could never happen to me.
You know,
I'm the greatest nation or I'm just me and my own pride.
Yeah.
These things could never happen to me. That's the thought that the Lord attacks.
Oh my goodness. I mean, you could talk about all kinds of different nations throughout history that have thought that way, but plenty of people say that in everyday life. I mean, you know, somebody's 81 years old and, you know, going to die and they're like, I never thought this would happen. And it's kind of like, you know, I mean, obviously this is not what I say. So if you're a pastor and you're listening, this is not what I say, obviously, you know, but I think, what else did you think was going to happen? What has happened to every sinner from the beginning of the fall till now? Like this is what happens with us. So if you have a city, a nation, an individual life that you think it's always going to be fine, That's the absolute craziest thing you could possibly think. And the thing about that thought is that it keeps you far from the Lord because it keeps you far from any sense of reckoning or accountability or judgment. You're never going to face that, so you don't think about it. It would be, I mean, I don't think about jumping out of airplanes because I don't plan to. Right? I just ride in airplanes. I don't jump out of them. So I don't think about, well, what do I do when I jump out of an airplane? Not thinking about it. Don't think it's going to happen to me. Right? Not planning on it. Not going skydiving for my 70th birthday. So if you don't think it's ever going to happen that you're going to die, of course you don't think about God, his judgment, what he wants, repentance, anything like that. And that's where Tyre has been. I mean, they've just been sort of coasting that way for hundreds and hundreds of years in the same way that people coast through decades and decades of life, much shorter time span, same reality, never thinking about the fact that they will meet the Lord. You know, your soul is demanded of you this night.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Lord opens eyes with for Tyre and for the whole world through these words.
Right.
Now, with verse 15, it does seem that we have a bit of a transition. In that day, well, that's a loaded phrase in the scriptures, and especially for Isaiah, it talks about Tyre being forgotten for 70 years. 70 years is maybe ring some bells biblically. Tell us what's going on here with the rest of this chapter.
So 70 years is biblically, you kind of have to prove. If you want to say, oh, that's a literal 70 years, and here's the 70-year time span. It went from, 1930 to the year 2000, 70 years. It was literally 70 years on Earth. The burden of proof is on you for that, because almost always when 70 appears, it is what we would call figurative, or it's picture language, or sometimes it's called symbolic, meaning it is a complete time, 70 years. It's a full time after which something completely new will come into being. So in our case, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, like the days of one king. And at the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre, as in the Song of the Harlot. And the picture here is that Tyre somehow survives in some sense, right? Or returns as a shadow of its former self, which is what it is now. In modern-day Lebanon, as well as what's called Sidonia, which is biblically called Sidon. These places are dependent on tourism. They are not the center of the earth anymore. They are not Manhattan. They are not the city of London. They are not Hong Kong. They are dependent on tourism so that locals can tell tourists about what used to be there, right? And that's the judgment. And the picture of them as a harlot, or asking for a harlot's wages, there's a kind of two different connections there. One is there's a constant connection, and this is really evident in the book of Revelation, which you referenced, Pastor Apple. This connection between wealth and trade and sexual immorality just pops up over and over and over again, and even the power that the harlot has over the nations is connected to her extravagance and her luxury and her ostentation. So Tyre will become like that. She will be begging when she used to command. The other connection here is that she will receive wages rather than being a source of seemingly infinite wealth. So rather than the money just flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing and everything's going to be fine, you will work for a living and you will get paid like a day laborer. And that's a completely different way of looking at money, right? You used to have abundance and now everything is scarcity. And that point is a complete change of station that when it happens to a person, right? So Isaiah here is talking about a city, or you might even say almost a nation, right? The capital city of a certain nation of Phoenicia, of a certain group of people on the earth. But when this happens in an individual human being's life, it should cause you to take stock. That is an incredible advantage to you spiritually. If at that moment you say, all of this has changed in my life, what does it mean? Where has it come from? Whose hand did these things come to me from? And can I know that? Can I know that God? Can I know that one who's in charge of the destiny of nations as well as my own life? Because when you have a change like that, if you don't take stock, you are the world's greatest fool. You were once one thing and now you are completely different. And maybe you were very poor and now you're very wealthy. Or in this case, you were very wealthy and now you're very poor. This is your chance to say, where did this come from? Who is the one who commands these things? Because I cannot believe that this happened, that these changes have happened to me, and that what was once a great and a wealthy city is now tiny and poor and begging for its existence.
There's two things left, I think, Pastor Koontz. One is, and I can't remember if you said this or not in our earlier conversation, about the actual destruction of Tyre that did take place. I think that's one more thing that we should mention if we haven't already. And
yeah.
The other thing, and then maybe this is where we can close, mm-hmm. would be there in verse 18, where it does talk about the merchandise of Tyre being holy to the Lord and even being used for those who dwell before the Lord. So maybe we've got about 3 minutes or so if you touch on both those things.
Yeah, the first one is easy. It's 3:32, and that is when Alexander the Great does what Ezekiel prophesies he will do, which is he will dump enough stuff into the water to make himself a causeway to take the island city. So Ezekiel prophesies that. Right after, you're done with today's program, go to Ezekiel 26, 27, 28. Go look at that. You're going to see a lot more really cool stuff in there. But that specific prophecy of how Alexander the Great overcame Tyre in 332 BC is gonna be there, right there in the scriptures. The second point is a helpful one because it's one that we've seen elsewhere just in this section about the various nations. And it's part of the larger vision of Isaiah, which is a vision of the conversion of the nations to the Lord. Also his vineyard, also his pleasant planting, also their turning back. Comfort, comfort my people, right? Speak ye peace, thus saith our God. That is for Israel and through Israel, to whom is given the adoption, the glory, the covenants, and the oracles. Through Israel, through the suffering servant, who is an Israelite, through him, the nations will also glorify the Lord. So that what was once unholy and served unholy purposes and served idolatrous gods will now serve the Lord. Right? Those beauties, those rich things, those wonderful things, that wealth will now serve the Lord. And so the conversion here is the conversion not just of Tyre, but also of all that Tyre is famous for and used for its idolatry will one day, by God's power, be used for the glory of the only God, of the only saving, the only true God.
Yeah, and so the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and ultimately, as you pointed out from Isaiah 55, will be revealed for salvation, for his people, his thoughts, not ours, his ways, not ours, in his grace. He saves us even after putting down our pompous pride. He saves us by his grace through the Lord Jesus Christ. The Reverend Dr. Adam Kuhn serves at Redeemer Lutheran Church and School in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. He has been helping us today to study Isaiah chapter 23, verses 1 to 18. Pastor Kuhn, thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you so much.
I am your host here on Sharper Iron, Pastor Timothy Apple of Faith Lutheran Church in Godfrey, Illinois. If you have any questions about Isaiah 23, send an email to kfuo@kfuo.org. It is always a joy to hear from you. Join us again tomorrow as we read Isaiah chapter 24. The Lord will empty the earth and make it desolate. His glory will be made known. There will be salvation for his people in the end. Thanks for spending the morning with us today. Talk with you again tomorrow.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to kfuo.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to kfuo.org/store.